from Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie. It's Wednesday, September the 11th, 2019. That is, of course, a very important date in history. We'll talk about that with my guest, Christopher Bolin, a little bit later on this hour. It is Wednesday's show, live on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, triggerwarning.tv, my own website, and many other platforms taking the programme around the world. This is your Richie Allen Show. And as always, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. Let's get on with it then.
Richie Allen.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, the author and the researcher, the academic Christopher Bolin, returns to the programme. It's been nearly a year since Christopher was on. We're going to talk about an article on bolin.com, that's B-O-L-L-Y-N.com. I will tweet a link to it shortly, if you haven't seen it, that links together some very interesting people around September the 11th, but also, of course, the recently departed billionaire financier Jeffrey Epstein. You don't want to miss that. Christopher Bolin talks Jeffrey Epstein on September the 11th with me in around about 25 minutes time. And if you want to tweet something to me, do it through my Twitter account. If there's a question you'd like me to put to Christopher, I'll be glad to hear it from you. Ah, yeah. Loads of stuff going on as well, of course. It never ends, does it? Never ends. Never ends. John Bolton has been sacked. The Walrus, he's called Trump a liar. Who sacked who first? Bolton said, I want to resign, said Bolton, and Trump said, we'll deal with it tomorrow, and then Trump sacked him on Twitter. Who cares? It doesn't matter. He's the National Security Advisor no more, but it won't make any difference whatsoever to the foreign policy of the Trump administration. I know it's tempting to be happy because, well, Bolton is so disgustingly sick and evil and twisted, but he leaves behind him a lot of equally twisted, sick and evil people too. That's John Bolton. A lot of talk about John Bolton, even on UK news channels today. Boris Johnson suspending Parliament, proroguing it, is unlawful, according to the highest civil court in Scotland. A panel of three judges at the Court of Session found in favour of those cross-party group of politicians who challenged the Prime Minister's move to prorogue. And the civil court in Scotland found that it is unlawful. The judges said that Johnson was attempting to prevent Parliament holding the government to account ahead of Brexit. There will be an appeal by the government against this, and it will be heard in London around about Tuesday of next week. The Court of Session decision overturns an earlier ruling from the court, which said last week that Johnson had not, in fact, broken the law. Oh, the drama. Think of the children in all of this. Think of the children. Remain MPs have demanded that Parliament is immediately recalled. Bore off. It's not going to happen. At least not till next week. Anyway, till the appeal is heard. Anyway. Tom Watson, Slim Fast Champion 2019. The Deputy Leader of Labour has called for a second referendum before any election. Jeremy Corbyn isn't best pleased. Who cares, eh? Why do you tell us then, Richie? I'm just updating you. What else is new? Boris Johnson will not do any election deal with Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage ahead of the election, whenever it is. This is according to Downing Street. Farage said, and I told you about this, didn't I, that his party and the Conservatives could make a deal and would be unstoppable together. It's like Lex Luthor and Ming the Merciless coming together. We'll beat Superman and Flash Gordon. So Farage said, look, we'd be unstoppable. And he took out two newspaper adverts, so he did, setting out his offer to help secure a big Brexit majority and to destroy Jeremy Corbyn. But senior Conservative people have been saying Farage isn't a fit and proper person. This is true. It's a direct quote. And he should never be allowed anywhere near government, eh? So that's what the news channels are talking about today. Let's screw politics, shall we? Let's bend politics over over the leather sofa and roger it senselessly. Let's screw politics. Let's go another way for the next few minutes. Do you want to hear the day's virtue signalling top of the pop charts? Do you? Like the salivating dogs that you are? Do you want to hear the top of the pop charts for virtue signalling? It'll break the internet today, I'm telling you. It's the best I've ever heard. Even better than Owen Jones. And all on one radio show too, by the way. All on one radio show, and by one radio presenter, Nikki Campbell. Nikki Campbell sewed up the top three positions on the Virtue Signalling Top of the Pops chart countdown this morning with a virtuoso performance on BBC Radio 5 Live. But before we hear the charts, let's have the context first, because context is very important. Radio 5 Live, through a Freedom of Information request, well, they went and learned for themselves, so they did, that although complaints of hate speech and hate crime by the LGBT community is on the rise, actual charges being brought by police forces is on the way down. In case you didn't get it, more and more LGBT folks are saying they are being hate speeched, but the police ain't doing squat about it. Before we hear the chart, the top three, Nikki Campbell listens to Lily. I talked about Lily this morning. She's a 17-year-old lesbian from Yorkshire. Now, Lily, Yorkshire is not the place to be from if you're a lesbian. They say what they like, and they like what they bloody well say in Yorkshire. So Lily is fed up with people walking up to her near Asda, Walmart, Asda, and saying unpleasant things to her. Here's Lily.
There was a guy outside Asda that walked up to me and my friends and said, "What is this, the fat, ugly homosexual squad?"
And was that completely unprovoked?
It was, yeah. We were just walking past.
And how did it make you feel?
It's really agitating, because I obviously want to be the bigger person.
Is this just one time, or does this always happen?
It's always happened, but more so recently. It's quite scary to think that just because of your sexuality, you're different or can be treated as such. And for younger people as well, it must be scary coming out. Walking past pubs, I get comments constantly. And in public toilets, there's always comments.
What do people say?
They turn around and go, "You're in the wrong toilet," or "This is the girls' toilet."
What?
Toilet. And I can read. I'd be in there for a reason.
Well, why don't you say that then? Why don't you give it back to them?
Do you feel like the police should be protecting LGBT people more, especially young people who are vulnerable like you?
Especially young people who are vulnerable like you, says the interviewer. Jesus wept. She's not vulnerable. She's obviously got some sort of personality. What does she say? Should the police be protecting vulnerable people like her?
Yeah, for sure. There should be, you know, no tolerance.
No tolerance. How ironic, eh? How ironic. There should be lots of tolerance for me and my identity, but no tolerance ever for anybody else. How ironic. Anyway, this is Radio 5 Live this morning. Nikki Campbell, the great Nikki, was never going to miss the open goals presented by such a news item. Do you want to hear the top three? At number three... Oh, we got to do the music first, don't we? Yeah, that's more like it, yeah. Oh, you got to love it. Here's the Virtue Signalling Top of the Pop Star Countdown for Wednesday, September 11, 2019. Nikki Campbell, at number three, tells the LGBT community how much he loves them. Go on, Nikki boy.
And also the whole issue of religious homophobia, which is ever more problematic. We've seen terrible examples of that in Birmingham, the Birmingham schools row. So more reports of homophobic abuse. Do LGBT people feel that they are under increasing threat? Because LGBT people do have, thankfully, increasing protection under the law.
Brilliant stuff, man. Remind us that you disagree with the parents in Birmingham, and at the same time tell us you are thankful that LGBT have more protection in the law. At number two, it's Nikki Campbell. He brings in his co-host Rachel Burden for a duet. "We've Made Strides" and "My Children's Friends Are Gay." Number two, Nikki Campbell and Rachel Burden.
But we've made such strides, Rachel, haven't we? I mean, at school, my kids have friends who are openly gay.
You're so lovely, Nikki.
That would never have been the case just a few years ago.
So go on, son.
A lot of aspects of this are moving in the right direction.
Well, yeah. Exactly. It feels like we have made huge strides forward, which
huge
is why then it is always surprising to me in my ignorance that this is what happens out there on the streets. It's shocking. Yeah. But we'll get your experiences of this, please, if you'd like to share them with us on 85058.
And a good litmus test is whether you feel confident enough to hold the hand of the person that you love public.
Do you feel confident enough to hold the hand of the person you love in public, Nikki Campbell? But the number one is the greatest I've ever heard in my life. Ever in my life. Again, this morning, same show, Nikki was talking about Britney Spears because Britney's daddy was court appointed to handle Britney's affairs when Britney had a meltdown. Do you remember? But he stepped back from that role. You will hear the entertainment reporter talk about Britney, and then you'll hear the number one, the best ever virtue signalling by Nikki Campbell, the best of all time. You've never heard anything like it.
That means he is in charge of all of her legal affairs, he has oversight of her medical care, and he also has the ability to restrict who she can see, who can come in and out of her life, with one exception, which is Britney Spears' own lawyer.
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's a huge talent, but as you say, she has had these enormous problems over the years.
Yes!
So how is she at the moment, and who's going to... Will there be a new conservator who's going to take over power of attorney and control of affairs?
Get in there. Did you hear it? Did you hear it? It's the best of all time, the number one.
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's a huge talent, but as you say, she has had these enormous problems over the years.
And again, he's always watched out for Britney.
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's a huge talent, but as you say, she has had these enormous problems over the years.
Yes, son! Nikki Campbell has shocked the world. He is the new virtue signalling heavyweight champion of the world. Nikki Campbell is looking out for Britney Spears. This is my day. This is my entire day. This is what I do all day long. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, God, because I can't even believe he said it myself. I'm going to play it again, right?
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's a huge talent, but as you say, she has had these enormous problems over the years.
Britney Spears' attorney, but not her daddy. What say you, Nikki?
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's a huge talent, but as you say, she has had these enormous problems over the years.
Rachel! Fantastic stuff. Now, the BBC, speaking of the BBC, it's relationships and sex education teacher Kate Daniels. The BBC has its own... relationship and sex education teacher. Her name is Kate Daniels. Kate is telling children that there are now 100 genders to choose from. 100. There are 100 genders. And I'm going to quote from Kate. She says, "You know, there are so many gender identities. We know that we have got male and female, but there are over 100, if not more, gender identities now." So the BBC has 9 new BBC Teach films out there in schools to support the personal, social and health education curriculum in schools. So the BBC is supporting personal, social and health education curriculum in schools. They've got 9 films out. Films designed to fuck up your kiddies' minds. Because there's 100 genders now. At least that you could be if you feel like it. Or maybe you don't have any choice, maybe. So we've got 100 of these things. Do you want to hear 100 of them? You don't. I don't blame you. Do you want to hear a few of them? You do. All right. Let's have a few of the... These are genders now that are genuine genders. And we should hear a few of them, I think. All right. So you could be biflux, and that's when one feels mostly or all male, but most of the time, but experience fluctuating intensity as male identity. Holy fuck. You could be burst gender. That's gender that comes in intense bursts of feeling, but quickly fades back to the original state. So that's burst gender. And you could be two-spirit. Two-spirit gender people have both a male and female spirit within them, and they are blessed by their creator to see life through the eyes of both genders. But you know what? You could be polygender. You might be polygender. Ding, 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 ding. Polygender. The feeling of having more than one simultaneous or fluctuating gender, simultaneous with multigender and one omnigender, whatever the hell that means. That's what you could be. This is the effing madness we are heaping on our children. Richard, yes sir, what's the capital of Finland? Helsinki, that's very good. What's 9 times 9, Rich? 81, good lad. Thank you, sir. What are the defining characteristics of trigender? Is that a gender that stretches over the spectrum of all genders? No, that's paragender. A week's detention for you, you Irish fuckwit, where you can learn your gender times tables. Your gender times tables. Learn your gender times tables. What is trigender multiplied by paragender? A fucking Egypt, that's what it is. That's the BBC. It's 18 minutes past the hour. This came up on Good Morning Britain today with Piers Morgan and Susanna. Do you like that? What's trigender multiplied by paragender? A fucking arsehole. Piers Morgan with Susanna Reid, a gay guy called Benjamin Butterworth. Benjamin Butterworth is a gay bloke, but he's a man. He's a man, right? And fair play to him, he thinks he's a man. And there was a trans woman called Nicole on, and they wanted to talk about this, and they had a few laughs. They ask Butterworth, the gay man, so they do, Mr. Butterworth, what is your gender? What's your gender, Benjamin?
I'm a cisgendered man.
What does cis mean?
So that means if you were born a woman and therefore you still identify as a woman, so you're a cisgendered woman, I would say.
And that's because of my physical...
That's because
femaleness.
You identify with how you were born originally. Well, I assume you're a cisgendered man.
I'm not a cis anything, mate.
If I may assume.
I'm not a cis anything. Well, I'm just a man.
Well, no, but you're a cisgendered man.
No, I'm not a cisgendered anything.
But hang on.
What does cis mean?
Punch him in the face, Piers.
Well, that means that you were born the way that you identify
now.
No,
I'm just born a man.
But someone who transitions.
Why are you insisting on calling me something I'm not?
Well, you can refer to yourself as just a man if you like. But
I think most people identify as male or female, man or woman.
That's right. The vast majority of people. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other people who identify differently.
There are 100 different genders on this BBC list, apparently. Mm. Right? One of them is two-spirit person. Polygender, pangender, neutroids, intergender.
I have to say,
do
you know what they mean?
I have no idea what they mean, and I'm part.
Right. Well, luckily we have the world expert here. What is any of this?
Look, I can't. Don't ask me to list off.
What's a two-spirit person?
I think that's someone who identifies with their native background into their gender.
Do you not think this is just like a vibe that somebody's having? Like when you tick a list, male or female, doing your passport or something. Mm. Is this not just this is just how they are. This is just a bit of a vibe.
Do you know what apologender is?
No.
They're very sorry about it.
Even though you support what the BBC is doing. This, by the way, this is the public broadcaster.
That what it is?
No, I don't know.
Hang on. The public broadcaster paid for by us with the licence fee is now instructing children there are 100 genders they can identify as.
Yeah, and when will Piers Morgan wake up to the fact that there's a very sinister agenda at play here? His co-host Susanna Reid makes a good point.
It is actually used as an insult when people are called cis.
Well, I was.
As soon as you start,
I'm being called a sissy right now, and I don't like it, Benjamin.
As soon as you box people into identities, it splits people off from each other, doesn't it?
Oh, she's a smart cookie, Susanna Reid. When you box people into identities, it splits them off from one another. Now, who would that benefit? Who in the name of Jesus? Susanna.
I don't like it, Benjamin.
As soon as you box people into identities, it splits people off from each other.
It actually does, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Why is this all happening now?
I think it gives people a sense of who they are, and I don't accept you can promote this. You know, I learned about World War II for several years at school, but I'm yet to think invading Poland is a good idea. You can't convince someone.
Can I identify? Can I identify? There's a penguin at the Sea Life Aquarium in London that is currently being reared gender neutral. Apparently has gay parents, right?
Two mums.
I have nothing to say on this subject.
Well, hang on, let me just say this.
Can I?
This is all yours.
Under this new world of self-identification, can, as I did earlier, now identify as a two-spirit neutroids penguin?
Well, you're not a penguin, because to use a bit of common sense.
Why? Who says I'm not?
Well, I mean, that's not a thing that happens. Why? This is the distinction. People do identify
as
different
genders. I'm actually a two-spirit neutroids pangender penguin.
And why not? Last word to Joan Collins. Why not? The legendary Joan Collins, 86 and still fairly beautiful, let's be honest. She was on Next on the same programme. Joan, what do you think of the BBC saying that there are 100 genders, Joan?
I find that very peculiar, quite frankly. Mm. And I've got three grandchildren in their teens, and I don't think that's happening to them. I mean, I know that there's LGBTQ and then a question mark. Well, Q is a question mark. Mm. But how can there be 100? It's ludicrous. Mm. I mean, like, you remember Jack Lemmon? Mm. I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl, I'm a girl. Right at the end
Why are we getting so obsessed with this kind of stuff? Why is everyone on such a campaign to kind of eliminate gender, to try and make everything so complicated?
Because the world's gone nuts.
Yeah. Joan Collins with the last word. Right, that's the monologue. It's 23 minutes past the hour. Thanks for your comments, by the way. It's the Richie Allen Show. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. And you can tweet me during the programme. And Christopher Bolin is going to join me in a minute. Bolin.com, that's BOLLYN.com. That's the website. Christopher is a very well-respected researcher, public speaker and author. Has written a series of books about September the 11th. And he got in touch with me and left me know, so he did. I got in touch with him, actually. I got in touch with Christopher because there is a terrific, very interesting article running on his website about Jeffrey Epstein and the 9/11 connection. You don't want to miss that. So he's going to talk to me about that in a minute. In the meantime, let me mention a few of the comments. Paul says, Richie, there is no way that Morgan does not understand what's going on. He's a gatekeeper playing the part of the layman arguing the toss. He's far too smart to be anything else, in my opinion. I wouldn't give him so much credit, Paul. I think sometimes we have to park this notion, as I discussed yesterday and this morning, about people in commercial and mainstream media being gatekeepers. Most of the time, they actually don't know what's going on. Hi to William. How you doing, William? It seems the gender times tables has tickled a few of you, yeah. That's the question. You'll be asking that to your children in a few years' time. What do you get if you multiply trigender by paragender? You get a fucking arsehole, is the answer, yeah, yeah. All right, I don't. Yeah, it is all fairly crazy, isn't it? Who'd be a parent? Hi to Paul Curtis. Is there an arson gender? An Arsenal fan who's confused about who they are. Paul, that is the jape of the day. I do declare it to be so. That's very good, Paul. I like it. Hi to John Stott as well. You're going to have this hilarity before we start talking serious stuff. Hi to Lance Burkett and Keith Skegwin. I wonder, or I've always wondered, says Keith, if Loretta from The Life of Brian was cisgender. Do you remember? I wanted to have a baby. But you can't have babies. But we'll fight for your right to have babies anyway. That's where we are. How prophetic Gilliam and Idle and Palin and Cleese and Jones were, eh? How prophetic they were, making their brilliant comedy shows, the Flying Circus and the films as well. Charlotte Binns says, I'm sure Britney will find solace whilst her life has been under complete control and lockdown for the past 11 years in the fact that Nikki Campbell has always rooted for her. Oh, it's better than that. It's better than that. This is what he said. We'll never hear virtue signaling like this ever again as long as we live.
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's...
He's always watched out and rooted for Britney, always.
I've always watched out for her very much and rooted for her. I think she's a huge talent, but as you say, she has had these enormous problems over the years.
Yeah, that's Nicky Campbell. I've got to listen to him every morning when I'm out and about with my dog. Because there's nothing better on the radio. My name is Richie Allen, by the way. This is The Richie Allen Show, Europe's most listened to independent radio show by far. Thanks for listening to me. Coming up soon, it's none other than Chris Bolin back in three. Bill Withers on The Richie Allen Show. The Jape of the Season. There's a competition going on Twitter for the Jape of the Season. I loved the arson gender jape. I loved it. I also love Trevor the Mules. My TV now identifies as a microwave, so I no longer need a license, says Trevor the Mule. Yes. Yes. There's no limit to it, really. You can take it forward and there's so much you can do. Hi to Joe Public. How you doing, Joe? Where do these nutters come from? Are they genuine and do they really believe what they say? If you mean the guy Butterworth, I think he's fairly genuine. They are genuine, these people. They do believe this nonsense. And let's leave it there, shall we? Shall we move on? I think we're going to move on and we're going to welcome back to the programme somebody whom I've known for many, many years. He's been very kind to me in coming on my radio programmes over the years. Today is the 18th anniversary of the attacks of September the 11th. I did say on the newspaper review programme this morning that kind of startles me because, as I've mentioned to you often, I worked that particular event I broadcast live on commercial radio while it was happening and relayed it to our audience. So it means a lot to me. It was the single event that made me begin to look a bit differently, to look at the world through a different set of eyes, maybe. And I was helped along the way by people, including my guest, who's an extraordinary man. He has lectured on this subject around the world. He's researched it. He's written papers on it. He has written several books on it, not just on this subject, but on others. And I highly recommend the Solving 9/11 series, The Deception That Changed the World. I recommend that book. There's so much I could tell you about his resume, but I'd rather use the time to talk about an article on his website. Go to bollin.com. That's bollyn.com. And that's where you'll find out more about him. It's a pleasure to welcome back somebody I believe to be a doyen, a veritable doyen in the 9/11 research community. Thanks so much to Christopher Bolland for coming back on the programme. Chris, welcome back. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you, Richie.
Thanks so much for your time, my friend, because I didn't give you much notice, and I know you're in demand all the time, let alone on a day like this. And what does it mean to you, Christopher? Let me ask you that first. Let's look at the human angle before we look at the facts. What does it mean to you 18 years later? Does it feel... Because to me, it feels like it was only... It doesn't feel 18 years ago. I can vividly remember covering this and, you know, basically giving a play-by-play account to my audience. I know it was life-changing in some ways for you. How do you feel about it today on the anniversary?
Well, that's a good question. I just finished watching the ceremonies in the United States in the various places, the Pentagon and the World Trade Center, and the reading of the names, the 3,000 names. And what occurs to me, what strikes me the most about this is how successfully they have hijacked the United States of America and hijacked our history. And they, of course, and this is the celebration of the events of the memorial. But they have completely stolen and given us a false history, which we have lived under for the last 18 years. And what's remarkable, of course, about these events, about 9/11 today, surrounding 9/11, is how much they push the military as being the patriotic response and what needs to happen. So they've foisted this narrative on us and hijacked our history completely.
Isn't it interesting you mentioned the military? I caught a little bit of Donald Trump's address on Sky News, and he was congratulating several generations of a family for joining the military. And this is a man who said before he was elected that we wouldn't have any more wars of aggression, Christopher. Have they succeeded in hijacking our history? Because it sounded very definite the way you put that. Have they achieved that, or is that fight still there for us to win?
Well, of course it's for us to win. The fight's still there for us to win because they have given us a false history, a false narrative that we have been, you know, suffering under for the last 18 years. But, you know, at the same time, there's more and more truth is coming out all the time. You know, I just, the University of Alaska study, for example, that came out in the last few days and says that it's not possible that that 47-story building fell down all by itself due to fire. And the only way it could have fallen, they said, a global collapse, is if all 40 central columns in the building had been cut simultaneously. So the truth movement and the truth is constantly, you know, coming back, but they're trying very hard with their narrative, their false narrative, to, you know, get us into more wars.
Like Iran, before we come on to talk about Epstein and focus more on September the 11th, like Iran, Christopher, is that a concern for you? Even with the dismissal of the neocon hawk, John Bolton, as National Security Advisor, I don't take any solace in that. I don't think it'll make any difference to the Trump foreign policy, which seems to be dictated to him, especially around Iran. It seems to be dictated to him by Israel. What say you?
Yeah, absolutely. He is. You know, Trump has done everything to serve the Netanyahu agenda. And Benjamin Netanyahu is doing everything he can to start a war with Iran. And, of course, the American sanctions, the U.S. sanctions that have been applied to Iran by an Israeli national, by the way, in the Department of Treasury, are in themselves, economic war against that country.
Christopher Bolin is our guest, and I'm going to plug this because it's important. You can get the entire set of Solving 9/11 books on Christopher's website for $50, folks. And that's a steal. That's a giveaway. The books are terrific. I know, I'm speaking from experience. I've read the books. The complete set of Solving 9/11 books for $50. And Christopher's not asked me to mention that, by the way. I'm mentioning it because it's important on this day of all days. Go to bolin.com, bolyn.com. These are crazy times. You've been following the story of Jeffrey Epstein, of course. Before we talk about your article on the website, what a strange set of circumstances. Epstein going to the holding jail. Epstein, we were told he was going to be watched and looked after. He was, you know, going to be a high priority. And then we find out then that he somehow managed to hang himself. How have you seen all of that recent? Because I just think it's crazy that anybody would believe that this guy could find the means in a cell to kill himself, with all the stuff going on, with all the allegations and all the friends of his in high places, the royal families, the billionaires, the politicians, and then the guy just manages to kill himself. We have no video of it, and nobody's given us any answers. What do you think, Christopher?
Yeah, I think it was... it's outrageous that, for example, the cameras weren't working, that they had removed the other prisoner from the cell several hours before he was killed or kidnapped, whatever happened. We haven't been told who these people are that went to his cell, who drove into the prison. He was a federal prisoner, by the way, and under, a very, very high value prisoner. And you see, of course, as soon as he's dead, they drop the case. In this case, the Epstein case, as you said, goes to the highest levels of the U.S. government and the British government and, you know, a lot of places. And it's a sexual blackmail operation that involved way too many people and way too much power that they could not possibly allow it to be investigated. So they had to pull a fast one. And, you know, they either took him alive out of jail or they came in the cell and killed him and then took him out. I don't know.
And it's very interesting reading your article today, The Epstein Connection to 9/11. It's on bolin.com. I'm going to tweet a link out to it now in the next couple of minutes while you're chatting away there. And before you get into that, and before you take us through these connections that Epstein has to some of these shady characters, is that your best guess as a researcher, that Epstein was part of a network that was used to blackmail people in positions of power in order to get those people to basically toe the line?
Well, yeah. And the thing is what's most obvious about this is that Epstein was working very closely with Ehud Barak, the former Israeli prime minister and defense chief, what have you, the man who interpreted 9/11 for the Western world on BBC World Television and Sky News on 9/11, before the third tower had even fallen that day, and told the world that now was the time, the world will never be the same, he said. This was 18 years ago today. The world will never be the same. We know who did it. We know where he's hiding. Now is the time for a concrete operational war on terror, he said. Basically spelling out the agenda for the next 18 years. And that's what happened.
And so Barak, of course, is obviously a very recognizable political figure of the recent past. Most people know who he is because of his time as prime minister in Israel. So how Jeffrey Epstein is this billionaire financier. How did Epstein come to know Barak, or what was his relationship with him?
Well, he was giving money. You know, Leslie Wexner is this wealthy Jewish a lingerie maker, the owner of Victoria's Secrets and some other companies. He was a member of a group called Mega. Mega was these American Jewish Zionist billionaires like Bronfman family, Lauder. Wexner was one of them. Leslie Wexner was basically entrusting Jeffrey Epstein with all of his money, which Jeffrey Epstein ran a Wexner foundation. And through this Wexner money, the foundation money, he was giving millions of dollars to Ehud Barak going back to 2004. And Ehud Barak was, the thing is that this basically connects the gang behind September 11th crime with the Epstein case, the Epstein operation.
So Wexner's a very, very powerful, very wealthy Zionist Jewish person in the United States, and he's a member of a group called MEGA. You'll forgive me, Chris, we've known each other for years. I go over this stuff again and again because it's important, because it's really important. And MEGA was basically like a lobby group, basically, of other billionaires and very wealthy people, and they were basically financing and funding those who would be very, very sympathetic to Israel, not only in the United States, but they were obviously funding politicians in Israel as well.
Right. And you know, they were funding Leslie Vexner was at least funding Jeffrey Epstein's operation.
Yeah, and Epstein was given money that he'd gotten from Leslie Vexner. He was given money then to Ehud Barak inside of Israel. Right. And this is all documented. You know this to be true.
Yeah. Yes. And what's interesting is that Michael Chertoff is on the board of directors of the company that Ehud Barak started called Carbine. And there was that company was funded by money also from Epstein. So this brings together the 9/11 people. You know, Chertoff was the person who was supposed to investigate 9/11, who didn't, who allowed the evidence to be destroyed. And it's a complete circle then. So you have – so that indicates to my mind that the Epstein operation was one to gain influence over high-level politicians and influence agents of influence in order to maintain the 9/11 cover-up, which, you know, they've succeeded in doing for the last 18 years.
And even prior to that, their operation through Wexner and MEGA was basically to promote politicians inside the United States that would be very sympathetic to a foreign policy that would be very pro-Israel.
Right, right. And you have – but you have other people in – you know, the Steven Spielberg, for example, the film director, is a member of MEGA. So is Ronald Lauder. Ronald Lauder is the cosmetics heir to the Estee Lauder money. And he's the one who privatized the World Trade Center. So it's like they're not only a lobby group. They're a group – because of their access to capital, they're a group that can make things happen at a high level.
So Spielberg is a member as well. Maybe other, again, like we're saying, maybe other prominent American Jews. Might there be levels to it in terms of compartmentalization? Might there be people involved in MEGA who might not be aware of what people further along the trough are doing, I wonder?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like we don't know who in MEGA knows about what Vexner was doing.
Yeah.
We don't know if Vexner knows what Epstein was doing. But I would certainly think that Vexner would be a person of interest that the authorities would want to investigate, because he was funding this operation, this pedophile sexual blackmail operation, and so he should be investigated. But what happens, what we've seen in America, just like 9/11, is that these mega crimes, these massive, huge crimes, are never investigated properly, like the Epstein case. They basically close the book on it. Then they – Ghislaine Maxwell is eating hamburgers in Hollywood or something. And, you know, it doesn't seem to be going any further.
No, let me just jump in there. Christopher Bolin is our guest today, an old friend of the show's and somebody who I genuinely believe to be a doyen of research into September the 11th. Let me just point out now that Leslie Wexner has gone on the record and he has spoken to CNN and he has said that he is embarrassed by his links to, and I quote, the depraved Jeffrey Epstein. So Wexner would say, yeah, I agree with you, Christopher. It's obvious that Epstein was depraved, but I had nothing to do with it. I knew the guy. I did business with him. But it's very unfair to taint me just because I knew him. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, why did he turn over? He turned over all of his money. The Jewish Telegraph Agency has an article that I include in my recent one in which he turned over all of his money to Jeffrey Epstein, a guy who didn't even have a degree in finance whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? And when you understand that Mr. Vexner is a member of MEGA, this Zionist lobby group of extremely wealthy Zionists in America, well, if he's a member of MEGA and he's doing this with Mr. Epstein, it seems that they're connected. That you know, you have to understand also that the MEGA group was started in 1991. After the first Gulf War, when the United States pulled together this Madrid conference and was trying to, you know, George Bush was trying to push the Israelis to compromise and get a peace deal with the Palestinians. And Shamir, of course, Yitzhak Shamir, the old notorious terrorist from the Lehi Stern gang, would have no part of that. You know, so he had to, he felt he was pressured to go to Madrid, Shamir was, with Benjamin Netanyahu. But they didn't want anything to happen to come out of this. Of course, nothing did come out of it. But they created MEGA. That's when, in 1991, Yitzhak Shamir created this group because he needed to have a pressure group, a power group of rich, influential Zionist Jews who would do his bidding, who would do the bidding of the Israeli state in the United States of America. And that's what we have. So we have – when Ronald Lauder, for example, privatized the World Trade Center – was he doing it at the behest of Israeli military intelligence? I would say most likely that was the case because, you know, Ronald Lauder, another member of MEGA, has a university at Mossad University in Herzliya, where one of his cohorts, one of his colleagues, is none other than Danny Rothschild, the general who is in charge of strategy for Israel.
And that's a fact in charge of Wexner. We're going to flesh this out in the next 30-35 minutes with Christopher, by the way. Lots of comments on this. People are fascinated by this. I agree that Wexner, at the very least, has to man up and face the criticism that because, as you rightly pointed out, he was given extraordinary amounts of money to Epstein, who doesn't have any qualifications. He at the very least, because he's so powerful, Wexner, he has to answer the question, excuse me, Mr. Wexner, but you would have had people check out Jeffrey Epstein. You know, we argue that you must have known about Epstein's sexual proclivities. I'll give you that, Christopher. It's very strange that he wouldn't know this or he wouldn't have had Jeffrey Epstein turned upside down before effectively going into business with him. So you believe, you conclude from that, that rather than be an investor, that maybe Epstein wasn't this wonderful investor, that what he really was he was not so much a gopher, but he was a guy that could make things happen. He was, how would I describe it now? He was a man that could get things done, basically.
Epstein,
yeah.
Yeah, I think Epstein was working an Israeli operation in which Ehud Barak was probably the senior manager, and Ghislaine Maxwell was also probably a manager above Mr. Epstein. But Epstein was running, basically, or working for an Israeli covert operation, which is the operation that we all know about from what we do know about Epstein's sexual blackmail. And this was a way that they could control the presidents of the United States and congressmen and senators and people of owning media, what have you, a whole host of people, academicians, lawyers, you know, all the people like Bill Clinton, who flew 26 times, I think it was, on the Lolita Express.
26 times, Christopher. Just before we talk about that, there will be some listeners very skeptical now. And they will say, Christopher, come on, Epstein, how could he have had so many fingers in so many pies? How could he be doing all this middleman work between Leslie Wexner's mega group and, you know, he was the man taking the money, giving it to Ehud Barak, and how could he be doing all of that and running a covert operation to sexually blackmail people? Some people will be skeptical and say, come on, this guy couldn't have been responsible for all of that. We're giving him too much credit. What do you say?
Right. That's right. He was working it. I don't say he was running it. He was working it. There was probably a team in Tel Aviv and in New York who was giving him names of people. Like I read one article about how he was trying very hard to get Bill Gates into his parties. And so he was basically a party animal. He would make these parties in which these people like Mr. Gates would be invited, or Bill Clinton, or, you know, models from Victoria's Secrets, what have you. There'd be some sort of attraction to bring people to the party, and then they would get these people in compromising positions and get films of them, pictures and films, you know, secretly, and then they had blackmail material. It's an old trick. It's
forever
been practiced forever, and it's also very common in America.
And here, Christopher, and here, don't forget, I mean, I know you know this, but Edward Heath, the former Prime Minister, Heath had a chief whip called Tim Fortescue, and you know this. Fortescue admitted on the BBC in 1997 that when members of Parliament were found to be abusing boys, they would come to the whips, the party whips, to get them out of trouble. And he said on BBC television, the whips would get them out of trouble because the MP who was abusing the boys would then do what they were told forevermore. You're right, Christopher. It's been around this blackmail for years and years and years. So let's stay with this then. Christopher Bolin is our guest. Go to Christopher's website, Bolin, BOLLYN.com. I've recommended the books. Christopher's got other books, of course, but I'm recommending again that you check out the Solving 9/11 series. And $50 for the entire series is a steal. I know there are people who don't have $50, and I do acknowledge that, but it's a steal. The research that has gone into them is terrific. Let's get this one out of the way, because I get it all the time. The people who say, why are you guys blaming the Jews for everything? It's always the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. They will say, hang on a second now, what about Leo Strauss's neocon students? William Kristol and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld and all these people, they're not Jews. They're not Zionists. They might be Zionists. They're not Jews. They had as much to gain by September the 11th as anybody else. And why do we always do the Israel angle? And I do get some... I think I've got a sizable Jewish listenership, Christopher, particularly here in Manchester. And they do say to me, Richie, come on, you know, the Jews, come on. Why do you always harp on about the Jews? Have you an answer for that, Christopher?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's not the Jews. That's the first point that has to be made. We're not talking about an ethnic group or a religious group in these crimes. We're talking about a small subset who may identify as Jewish. Most likely they do, not all, but they're Zionist. And they are the group we're talking about behind 9/11, like the group that's behind the war on terror doctrine, is a small group of Israeli, mostly former terrorists, people like Yitzhak Shamir, Shimon Peres, Ariel Sharon, Menachem Begin, Shaul Eisenberg. You know, it's at the top, it's a group of maybe two dozen men, mostly Israeli, some Rothschilds involved. Like I said, Danny Rothschild, Ronald Lauder, not all Israelis. And they are the people who, using their offices, using their power, developed this doctrine of the war on terror back in the 1970s. And then, in order to make the war on terror become real, they had to have an earth-changing event that would shock the West into supporting basically an open-ended war against Islam.
No, I agree
with
this.
And that's what they got. And it's so it's like when people can conflate Jews with Zionism with the 9/11 terrorists, That's not possible.
I agree with you. It's not a Jewish thing. It's got nothing to do with Jews. And these people are not Jewish either, even if they say they are. And they're certainly not religious. I agree with you. Here's another question on that, Christopher. Thanks again for your time today, by the way. Huge interest in this massive swell. We've got an enormous daily listenership. I know it's gone up. I had a look at the metadata just before we came on air. Huge interest in this with you coming on, because you're well known, not just for this subject, but others. What about those who say, and this is the last question I'll ask on this subject, what about those who will say, come on, there must have been men and women working at the National Security Agency, at the CIA, patriots. There must have been. Who knew that these guys were up to this? Surely they would have stood up to it and said something. Surely the NSA, the CIA, they're not so bad that they didn't know that this Zionist plot was ongoing. And some people find that hard to explain. Do you have any answer for that, Christopher? Because I don't.
Yeah, well, first of all, it was highly compartmentalized. The Israelis learned, Mossad learned back in the early 1950s after the debacle of the Lavon affair in Egypt, where they tried to blow up British and American targets in Cairo. They learned to compartmentalize operations. This operation would have been highly compartmentalized. The American partners, if there were any, would have been people like Michael Chertoff at the Department of Justice, who then became the person in charge of the investigation which became a non-investigation, accompanied with the destruction of the evidence. But it would have been people who were highly connected to the intelligence and known to be loyal to the state of Israel. And there are very few leaks coming from this operation, because it was a foreign operation. The Israelis, they have the key, the encryption keys to the NSA. They provide them to the NSA, and they are the ones who have been sharing NSA information for years now, through their split prism operation in San Francisco, where they were one set of data was going to the United States, one set of data was going to Israel. It's like the idea that American bureaucrats working at the CIA or NSA would somehow have caught wind of this plot. No, it's not at all necessary that would have happened, because it's not being discussed on email. You know, these guys aren't doing it in chat rooms. This is done, first of all, probably in the language of Hebrew, probably in very secure channels, if at all. It's not being discussed on the internet. It never was. So the idea that somebody would have known in the United States of America, apart from the fellow culprits, is not necessarily at all the case.
Fair enough. Christopher Bolin is our guest. Christopher, that segues nicely. Before we go back to Epstein and your article, which is on the website bolin.com, by the way, folks. Christopher, tell me this. The dancing Israelis. I could have given you a shout back in May. I don't know why I didn't, actually. I mentioned it on the programme, but I didn't actually do a show on it. But when the FBI, because they were compelled to do so by a Freedom of Information request, when they released the photographs of the dancing Israelis, and they were all terribly redacted, and the timestamps on some of the photographs were very unusual, that convinced me once and for all that the dancing Israelis, who were, you know, mentioned for a couple of days or a few weeks anyway in the media at the time, they were hugely significant, these five men, weren't they? Do you want to talk a bit about the dancing Israelis? Because today of all days, you mentioned earlier on the Alaska study, and I had Richard Gage on the programme yesterday talking about this. It was fascinating. I'm thrilled you brought that up. Most people don't know about Building 7. Christopher mentioned Alaska University have run a model 4 years, incredibly powerful computer systems. They believe that they can prove that fire did not bring down Building 7. It was a global collapse, where all the structures basically collapsed at the same time. This is massive, by the way, and it's not in the mainstream media. Important that we talk about that. But it's also important today that we talk about the dancing Israelis.
Mm. Yeah, well, the five dancing Israelis are pretty important. As I was driving, away from New York City and going back to Chicago on September 11th, I heard the report on the radio that the FBI was looking for five Middle Eastern men. And I told, hell yeah, my wife, I said, they could be Israeli. And lo and behold, it turned out the next day that they were Israeli. They were five Israeli men who had been captured, caught by the New Jersey State Police. And they were known, two of them were known Israeli agents of the Mossad, the Kurtzberg brothers. And they were caught, they had been filming the attack on the World Trade Center from across the river, across the Hudson River in New Jersey. And they had all the characteristics, all the of the people who were involved in the crime. They had box cutters. They had multiple passports stuck in their socks. They were ready to flee the country the next day or so. They had thousands of dollars also stuck in their socks. And they tried to blame it on the Palestinians. As soon as they were caught, they said, we're Israelis. We're not the problem. It's the Palestinians are the problem.
Yeah.
So this group was pretty important, but they were held, in the lockup in Brooklyn for about 60 days. They refused to take lie detector tests, and when they did take the lie detector tests, they failed.
Well, they were inconclusive. They were inconclusive as far as I understand. I knew you'd say failed. I love you, Christopher, but I knew you'd say failed. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand, mm-hmm. they were inconclusive. Not necessarily a failure. There were some problems with them. Go mm-hmm. ahead.
There was a failure. I don't have the article at my fingertips, but I think that the Kurtzberg brother, Sivan Kurtzberg, his failed. He failed it. But
okay.
Obviously documenting the attacks. They went back to Israel. They appeared on the Yair Lapid show, who's running for president of Israel right now, by the way.
That's right, that's right.
They told him that we were there. We come from a country that experiences terrorism on a daily basis. We were there to document the event, they said. And they were, according to the news reports, the various news reports, they had been in position, ready to begin filming before the first plane struck.
Yeah, and I believe they were. You know, I do. I know we can't say with 100% certainty, but I think in a court of law they'd lose. They were there. And the photographs released by the FBI back in May were heavily redacted, weren't they? Why would they do that? Why in the name of God would they do unless there was something to hide?
Yeah, they wanted to hide their faces, I suppose. I don't know, but we have their faces anyway. But the thing is that those photos weren't very valuable, what the FBI released, the FOIA. But these men were working for a company called Urban Moving Systems, based in Weehawken, New Jersey, which was reported by the Forward newspaper, which is a Jewish newspaper in New York City, that it was a Mossad front operation. And it was there, basically, to facilitate the 9/11 attacks. It wasn't a real moving company at all. And there was one or two American employees at this operation who, you know, worked there. And they were shocked that when 9/11 happened, these people and Israelis in the office were like cheering and happy and like high-fiving because it was a successful operation for them.
Christopher Bolin is our guest, and I want to remind you what we've talked about so far. The Epstein connection to 9/11 is on Christopher's website, and he's put together a series in the article of very, very interesting facts. And a lot of the information was brand new to me, and I know it will be to you as well. You know, about Yitzhak Shamir, who founded an organization called MEGA, which was basically a group of very rich American Zionists coming together to support Israel in several ways by funding Israeli politicians that were on the very, very far right, but also funding politicians in the United States as well. And a very prominent member, Leslie Wexner, of MEGA, was given money to Jeffrey Epstein for years. And Christopher has posed the question, was Wexner supporting Epstein to finance covert Israeli operations? Epstein was given money to Ehud Barak, of course, whom you all know who he is. And Christopher said earlier on, and he's right to say earlier on, Barak was the man that spun the narrative for the entire world on the day of the attacks, wasn't he, Christopher? On the BBC, on Sky. He told the world what to think about it, but also what had to happen thereafter. And Epstein was right in the middle. So the $64 million question, and I suppose there's no proof. Would Epstein have known that there was an operation to stage a false flag terrorist attack in New York? Would he have been on high enough up the trough, as I said earlier on? What do you think? It's only speculation, but what do you think, Christopher? No,
I don't think so. Why would he know? He would not know. No,
wouldn't have known.
He's way too low on the chain.
Isn't that incredible? A guy with the amount of money. A lot of people are saying to us that they didn't know about the moving company. So I suppose I should just get you to confirm that I know this to be true. So I didn't challenge Christopher because I know it to be true. The moving company the Israelis claim to be working for has been affirmed to be a front organization for Mossad. Not only that, but a couple of these dancing Israeli guys were in fact working for Mossad in other countries. This is not conjecture. It's true. Christopher, just double stamp that. That is true.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, the Kurtzberg brothers, Sivan and his brother, the two Kurtzberg brothers, they're the ones who did not appear on the show. They sat in the audience. And the company is Urban Moving Systems in Weehawken, New Jersey. And it was reported, what was reported that it was a front operation was information that had been provided to Forward newspaper by the FBI.
How sick are you that we live in a world that the FBI have acknowledged most of this and the mainstream media does nothing with it, Christopher? They know this stuff, don't they? They bloody well know it. Where's the executive producers of programs, television news programs, saying, hang on a second, did the FBI just acknowledge that one of these dancing Israelis has, or two of them have worked for Mossad in other countries? They just ignored it. And again, it's because key people are positioned in all of the 24-hour-a-day news channels. Key people are positioned as gatekeepers to make sure that the producers and the presenters never breathe a word, right?
That's right. The story was published in the Bergen Record, which is on the New Jersey side of the river. It was written by a man named Paulo Lima about the five Israelis, the dancing Israelis, we call them. But that story did not cross the river into the New York media, because if you've ever lived in New York City or been there, you know that the New York media is saturated in Zionism. it's owned by Rupert Murdoch and the New York Times, what have you. And, you know, if you're not a Zionist, you'll feel very uncomfortable in New York City because the saturation of the media is intense. And of course, they're not going to bring this out. They're not going to bring out anything critical of Israel in the New York media because they have a very large Jewish readership that they want to keep in line, so to speak. They want to keep these people supportive of Israel. And, you know, if something critical of Israel, that'll change their opinion. They don't expose the readers to this.
And don't forget, Manny Friedman wrote an article in the Times of Israel, which was eventually scrubbed and taken down, where he basically boasted. It wasn't a satirical piece. It wasn't comedy. He bragged about how Zionists control the media in the United States, bragged about it, and said that, you know, Zionist Jews shouldn't apologize for being excellent at their jobs, that we do have basic control of the media. And that article was scrubbed, but not before many people saved it and shared it around. That's coming from Manny Friedman. Christopher Bolland is our guest. This is not a Jewish plot. You see, they try to destroy people and people's careers and reputations by claiming that people like this programme, like me and like others, are blaming it on Jews, that Jewish people are somehow this malevolent group of horrible little, goblins who are trying to control the world. It's not true. It's a nonsense. These people are not religious. These people are not really Jews. They hide behind their perceived Jewishness because of what happened in Nazi Germany and because of the sympathy for that. That's what I believe. I've had a tweet from David Stanford. He says, why does nobody ever mention the German connection? I've had that before from people. You know, Germany and the European Union and how powerful Germany is within the European Union. German influence, not only in Europe, but around the world. Do you think there is any German connection to any of this, any German state connection or deep state connection to 9/11, Christopher? What do you think?
No. I haven't found anything like that. You know, Germany is still occupied. Actually, there is no peace treaty with the United States or with the Allies at this point.
That's
like
true.
There's no peace treaty between Russia and Japan, and there is no constitution in that country. They have simply a basic law, which was given to them by the Allies, in which the proclamations of occupation still stand
to this day. And I'm guessing, well, I couldn't imagine the percentage, but very few people know this, Christopher, right? This is how uneducated people are today. Mm. How frustrating.
I wanted to say one thing about this. Israeli author named Avi Schleim wrote a few years ago an article about how Zionism was the greatest enemy of the Jewish people. And it was printed in the International Herald Tribune, which is the New York Times foreign edition, European edition. But it was not printed in the New York Times New York edition. Because, of course, it was very critical of Zionism, declaring, in fact, that Zionism – this is an Israeli professor writing that Zionism is the greatest threat to the Jewish people. And when you understand the 9/11 thesis that I present, you can really understand that, because it's the Jewish people, the honest Jewish people who are not involved in this criminality, who are the ones who are exposed to the wrath of the public when the crimes of their evil cabal that rests within the body of the body politic of this Jewish people, Israel, does terrible things. I mean, what Israel does every Friday when going and shooting kids at the Gaza Strip, you know, shooting through a fence and just shooting people like animals, doesn't that give us some indication of what kind of country we're dealing with here?
It's evil. Well, certainly the people behind it. Because, you know, one of the things, Manchester is obviously a very historical city and it's a very famous trade union city, and it's got a great tradition of genuine socialism, real socialism, not the fake socialism that we see today. And often in Piccadilly in Manchester, there will be protests and there will be people handing out leaflets to talk about the horrors inflicted on the Palestinian people. And I'll tell you something, Christopher, you'll see a lot of Jewish folks there, and it's not just Orthodox Jews either. You'll see a lot of Jewish folks. It's not a Jewish plot. A lot of Jews are, I think Jews are no different than anybody else. Most of them are completely unaware of it. I mean, why would Jewish folks in Tennessee or Jewish folks in Oslo, why would they be any more awake to this agenda we're talking about than some Irish guy living in New York or some Irish guy living in Belfast. They just don't know, because most people get their information from the same sources. Sadly, sadly, most people, you've done amazingly well over the years travelling around the world and your books have been terrific. But because you don't get a phone call from the BBC to explain yourself, sadly, because I think if you were wrong, Christopher, they'd be very quick to bring you on, by the way. You know, if you were wrong and talking crap, they'd bring you on. But, you know, we are limited in terms of the people we can reach. And Jews are no different than that. Israel, as an endeavour, is a racist endeavour. The country doesn't have any legal right to exist, not in any law, not in any serious sense. The Sykes-Picot agreement, the treaty, Balfour Declaration, it's all illegal. You mentioned the Stern Gang, the terrorism against the Palestinian people. It's an evil thing, but we can't blame Jews for it. It's not the fault of Jewish people or anything like it, in my opinion. But these,
that's right.
But you know, I was going to ask you, Christopher, because in the UK at the moment, the Zionist lobby is working very hard to convince people that anti-Semitism is on the rise and that Jewish people are in mortal danger. Now, thankfully, I speak to Jewish people and I ask them and they're bewildered. They're like, really? This is news to me. I go about my business and nobody bothers me. Even if I wear the skull cap, Richie, nobody bothers me. Every now and then some kid will say something stupid, but that's no big deal, Richie. I'm a big boy. I can take that. Is that happening in the U.S.? I know you're not based in the U.S. So much these days, Christopher, but are we seeing that around Europe and around the U.S., this fake narrative that anti-Semitism is on the rise?
Oh, yes, the fake narrative, very much so. But and, you know, they have some shootings now and then in the United States at synagogues that are quite mysterious. But no, it's as you say, anti-Semitism is not on the rise in the American population or in Europe. But this is the thing, is that when Zionism does such outrageous things like they're doing down in Gaza every week, or if they, you know, what they've done in Syria, what have you. If the truth were known, the Western populations would be really irate against the state of Israel, but not the Jewish people. But this is the thing, is that Zionism puts the Jewish people in danger. That's very obvious, because they wear the mantle of Judaism, the Zionists do, on their sleeve. So, you know, who gets hit when things get difficult? It's the common Jewish guy down the street. Not the Rothschild sitting in his palace, you know, behind three fences.
Yeah, I've always said that I believe that people who died in Nazi Germany would turn in their graves, metaphorically, if they knew what these evil psychopaths were doing in the name of, you know, well, we're Jewish and, you know, we're trying to make a better world, the lies they tell. I reckon, you know, and I know the descendants of people who died in Nazi Germany are disgusted by, because we're told that Zionism is basically this, you know, endeavour for a permanent home place for the Jewish people. But it's not about that or anything like it. It's far more dark and sinister than we're told it is. Christopher Bolin is our guest, and we've got Christopher for another few minutes, not for much longer. He's got other engagements today, by the way, so just for a few minutes more. Back to September the 11th, 18 years on. I don't want to be depressing at all, Christopher, but, you know, I imagine in the 1970s, people were talking about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, November 22nd, 1963, and they probably couldn't believe, as time was going on, they maybe felt that the opportunity to get justice for Kennedy was maybe slipping away. Do you feel that sometimes about September the 11th? We do keep it alive by talking about it, but 18 years later, how much more is there to be done to alert people to the fact that what they understand about 9/11 is nonsense? How do you feel about it 18 years later?
Well, discussion of the details of the crime of 9/11 are worthwhile to do, but the point is that, as I said, the 9/11 narrative was used to hijack our history. And our history and our nation, the United States of America, and to some degree Britain, remain hijacked. So it's like, as time goes by, our situation does not get any better. It gets worse, because we're spending all this money in these wars. We're fighting all these wars. We're living a false reality. We're living in a hijacked history, and that's not going to get better until we get some truth. And that's why it doesn't, 9/11 doesn't become a less important subject. It becomes a more important subject all the time, because 9/11 truth ends the war.
It ends the war. And last week's, or the weekend's announcement out of Alaska, you must have been fairly happy with that. I know you'll always keep in mind the fact that people died horrible deaths on the day. So we don't jump up and down and scream with excitement when we hear the news from Alaska, but we've got to be very happy with it.
Well, it's good. It's good that finally, you know, we've got a an academic institution like a university supporting 9/11 truth. I mean, to the degree that they are doing that, it's we're getting solid evidence, facts to challenge the narrative, the unproven government narrative, the media narrative, which is so full of holes. It's unbelievable. But you know, anybody who watched the collapse of those towers, all three towers on 9/11, I would have a hard time understanding how anybody could think that that was done by fire.
Yeah.
You know, because you had steel elements weighed tens of tons being thrown laterally from the South Tower and the North Tower, hundreds of feet. Well, you know, that takes a huge amount of energy. You can't just like, that doesn't fall that way. It was thrown that way. And, you know, Building 7 just fell down in its own footprint, you know, with only a couple little office fires in it. But, you know, it's not possible.
It's not possible. Final question, Christopher. Absolutely final question, by the way. And thanks for your time today. I'm going over the agreed time. I'm being a bit cheeky, but thanks for coming on. final question. And by the way, folks, I meant what I said about the books. Solving 9/11, The Deception That Changed the World, the series, is available on Christopher's website, bollin.com, bollyn.com. The entire series for 50 books, and it's terrifically well researched and very well written. It really is. And I recommend you pick up a copy if you can, and read it and share it with people. You know, give it to your best pal, give it to your sister, give it to your brother, and say, take a read of this. Final question then on this. I get asked from time, it's a stupid question really, maybe I shouldn't end with this, but my listeners won't forgive me. There are people who believe that maybe technology that we maybe don't know about might have been used to bring the buildings down, because mm-hmm. they basically evaporated. Some people believe that energy mm-hmm. weapons, because we know that sound is an amazing weapon and can be mm-hmm. used as an amazing weapon. Do you give any credence to those theories about directed energy weapons, or have you seen any evidence?
Well, I was given that story back in December 2001 by a former German Stasi agent who also worked with Mossad. And she tried to sell me the story that an energy beam weapon was used, fired at the buildings, and they came down. But the evidence the evidence that we have from 9/11 indicates that, first of all, there was molten iron pouring off, molten metal, presumed to be iron, pouring off the 81st story of the South Tower for 7 minutes before it fell. The buildings fell from the top down. They were obviously exploding. And they did find in the rubble, in the dust of the rubble, they found a nanocomposite of thermite, which has immense power, detonates at a very fast rate, is explosive, and this nanothermite had an organic layer attached to it, so that created the gas. So when this powerful nano superthermite exploded, detonated, it created this gas, which was the explosion, and that's what apparently was used to pulverize a lot of the floors. You know, 110 floors were pulverized of concrete. But there were huge explosives in the basement. There were huge explosions that occurred before the plane even struck the North Tower, as per William Rodriguez's testimony. And, you know, there were big explosions going off every 10 floors or so, according to the people that were there. And you could hear them. You could see the videotapes. So there were all kinds of explosives being used. But the one that they thought they would not be discovered was this nanothermite. When this nanothermite was discovered in the summer of 2006, 2007, that's when the bad guys turned against me and the professor in Utah who had discovered it.
Christopher, thanks for your time today. On this day of all days, I didn't give you much notice, but you came through. And that's very kind of you. I do recommend your books, you know that. I don't recommend very much. Bollin.com is Christopher's website. I know you've got plenty to do today. Do give our best regards to your wife, Helia, Christopher, who's a great asset to you and is always very helpful as well. And thanks for your time, my friend, and I look forward to speaking again in the near future.
Thank you, Richie. Keep up the good work. You do a great job.
Thanks, my friend.
Bye-bye.
It's a pleasure. That was Christopher Ballin, live on the line from his home there, Ballin.com, B-O-L-L-Y-N.com. The books are there as well. I'd asked the question about the energy weapons. I knew the answer I would get. I don't know anything about geology or structural geology or structural integrity or anything like that at all, but I do lean towards Richard Gage and the architects and engineers. I lean towards somebody getting access to those buildings in the weeks prior to September 11, 2001 and placing charges in those buildings. That's what I would lean towards. But because I'm not, I know I sound like an arsehole sometimes. I know I do. I'm well aware of it, even though I'm not. I never dismiss entirely out of hand somebody's surmising of something or somebody's theory, because only foolish people do that, because it can come back to bite you in the arse. You know, in a few years time, there might be other information that emerges, and then I would have to say, oh, I feel like a bit of an idiot now, so I wouldn't dismiss it. But if I had to put money, because we know that the official story was a nonsense, we know it, people, that's the most important thing. You know, Thomas Hamilton, was that his name? It's been a long day because I had other things to do. Thomas Keane, Richie, and Lee Hamilton, their report, there's a 9/11 Commission report, which I did read. Massive though it is, I did read it very carefully and was horrified by it. It's a nonsense. And yet people have beaten one another up and have fallen out with one another and sworn never to talk to one another again over the details. Of course the details are important. But the most important thing is that we agree that 19 guys armed with, we would say Stanley knives, our friends in the United States would say box cutters. Let me just send a quick message there to Christopher, because he's been very kind, so he has. I'm banging me bloody glasses off the microphone again. Ah, Jesus, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we would say Stanley knives, they would say box cutters. The notion that these men took over these planes and then flew them into these targets, it's a nonsense. I did mention on the programme some time ago that a long-serving airline captain, 30 years an airline captain, working for Aer Lingus, I can say that now, told me, and remember, this man didn't believe in any conspiracy theories. He wasn't a conspiracy theorist. As far as he was concerned, terrorists attacked the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, as far as he was concerned. Right. This is back in my Spain days. But he was able to say to me that Hani Hanjour could not have flown Flight 77 into the Pentagon. And that was a big head-scratcher for him. That really bugged the bejesus out of him. And he was retired at this stage, and he said that some people in America had been in touch with him from Pilots for 9/11 Truth, but he didn't want to get involved in any of that. But he agreed with them that it was a cock-and-bull story that Hani Hanjour could have crashed Flight 77 into the Pentagon. And the wings clipping those lampposts and the plane skimming above the ground and just smacking into just the right place in the Pentagon. He said it was a nonsense. And yet, because of cognitive dissonance, maybe, he wouldn't go any further than that. So it's a nonsense. Whether energy weapons or nanothermite was used, I don't know. I'm very fond of Richard Gage and the people he works with. And I think their theory and their conclusions are the most plausible and the most likely. They got access to the buildings, placed their charges, and used fly-by-wire technology, maybe, or uninterruptible autopilot technology, maybe, to fly the planes into the buildings. Because I don't believe that the flights that went into the buildings in New York City, I don't believe those pilots could have done that. Either. And a lot of pilots don't believe it either. And that's where we are. 18 years later. Look, it's been a crazy day. It's a slightly shorter show today. Just a 90-minute show for you today. But you'll like it, is what you'll do. And you'll put up with it. I've got a few things to do. I've got some people to line up for tomorrow. But I'm going to be speaking with John tomorrow live on the programme. And you don't want to miss John. We're going to be talking about councils in the UK and a massive litter enforcement scam that is huge, that John was right in the middle of and came out the other end of in Liverpool. And I can't wait to speak to him. John is going to be among the guests on the programme tomorrow. It'll be a packed Richie Allen show tomorrow. Before that, of course, you and me will talk again on the newspaper review show, which is a pile of shite, basically. But it's at 9:30 every morning on YouTube. It's just me bullshitting about the newspapers, but it's a bit of fun. That's on the YouTube channel. It's not the Richie Allen radio show. And tomorrow, as I said, we'll have John from Liverpool and much more besides as well. It'll be a packed old programme, so it will, don't you know, to be sure, be Jesus. And David came back to say, Richie, as I've said before, the ins and outs of the cat's arsehole is arbitrary. The fact that we have been bullshitted is what's important. Unification people, come on. Good man, Richard Wells, David, I should say. Good man, David, well said. You know, well said, mate. And he also went on to say that the Boeing, the Flight 77 would have fallen to bits. Absolutely right. It couldn't have descended on the flight path that was allegedly executed by Hani Hanjour. Every pilot in the world agrees with that. So therefore, the Pentagon story is bullshit. I do honestly believe that a cruise missile was fired into the Pentagon. That's what I believe. But I could be talking through my arse, because what do I know? Right? I know nothing. Thanks for listening today. Thanks so much to Christopher Bolland. Go to bolland.com, bolland.com. Check it out. Fascinating stuff about Epstein and the money and Ehud Barak and Leslie Wexner and the group Mega. A lot of people didn't know that. I didn't know too much about it till Christopher got into it. And it's important that we have people like him doing that work, isn't it? It's also important that we challenge him as well to back it up. Right, I'll see you tomorrow. How many times do we say goodbye to the Irish? There's gotta be...